Welcome to Hearing Matters with Dr. Janice Gash, Founding Director of Arizona Hearing Specialist. This is a live call-in show, and your calls are welcome at 790-2040. Now, here's your host, Dr. Janice Gash.
Hello, thank you for joining me today for Hearing Matters. I'm Dr. Janice Gash, your host. I'm also the founding director of Arizona Hearing Specialists. We were the first private audiology practice in Tucson, and this year we are celebrating 30 years of helping our patients hear their best and helping patients live their best. This is a live call-in show, so please call us today with your questions or comments at 790-2040. Also, I'd like to recommend that you look at our website at www.arizonahearing.com. There's a lot of information and free educational videos and, as I said, a wealth of information about hearing and hearing loss. As the first private audiology practice in Tucson, we have helped thousands of people to hear their best, and our doctors of audiology and our superb administrative staff have built a reputation of excellence within the medical and general communities of Tucson and Green Valley. Furthermore, we're the only Audigy-certified practice in Tucson and Green Valley, and what that means to you is that our professionals are in the top 3-5% in the nation when it comes to delivering superior care and value. We are preferred providers for most insurance plans, and if you feel that you or one of your loved ones has a hearing loss, please call to schedule your hearing evaluation and learn more about our customized solutions for every lifestyle and budget. In Tucson, you can call 742-2845, and in Green Valley, 648-3277. So today I am very, very excited to have as my guest Dr. David Perry. David Perry is a highly respected otolaryngologist, that is an ear, nose, and throat physician. He has practiced in Tucson since 2006, and he is the only ear, nose, and throat physician in Tucson now performing cochlear implant surgeries, and I'm delighted to have him on the show today. So welcome, Dr. Perry.
Thank you, Janice. It's a pleasure to be here.
We've talked about this for a while, so I'm glad you're here. I thought what we would start out with is having you tell us a little bit about yourself and what led to your interest and expertise as an ENT physician, and then I'd love to talk a little bit more about cochlear implants and some other areas of expertise.
Great. Well, I grew up in Tempe in a rather large family in the shadows of the very dark shadows of Arizona State University and got away as quickly as I could. I went to undergraduate at Brigham Young. There I was in a chemistry class, and my current wife was the TA of the class, so I did well in that class, needless to say.
Good.
And we were married undergraduate. During that time at BYU, I spent a mission and learned to speak Spanish, so I am fluent in Spanish, and then I came back to Arizona for medical school. And during the, I guess, second and third year of medical school is when I really became interested in ear, nose, and throat as a specialty. And at the time was somewhat unaware of the really breadth of the specialty, but it was certainly attracted to me as it dealt with a lot of problems that people see on a really regular basis, hearing loss certainly being one of them. And from University of Arizona, I matched in residency in Dallas and spent 6 wonderful years in Dallas, Texas, doing training. And following that, had a real specific interest in pediatric otolaryngology, and so I went back east to Harvard for a year to do a fellowship. During that course, my wife and I had 6 kids, and so we were fortunate to come back to Tucson in 2006, and we've been here ever since and love it.
Great. That's great. And I know that we've talked about really love doing things outdoors, and all of your kids are under the age of what?
Right. So my oldest is 14. The youngest is just a year old. And as you can imagine, it's rather busy during the week because they're involved in all the sports you could think of. We love going down to Mexico. We travel down there at least annually, usually a couple of times a year, and so just take advantage of all Tucson has to offer.
That's great. And I know that you're also board certified by the American Board of Otolaryngology and a member of the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Otolaryngology Head and Neck Surgery and the American Society of Pediatric Otolaryngology. And you and I are actually serving together on the advisory board for the University of Arizona Department of Speech-Language Hearing Services, or Speech-Language Hearing Sciences at the U of A.
That's correct,
you
yeah.
just come on that board, so
right.
that's been great. So, you know, one of the reasons you and I have talked about, one of the reasons I actually was led to start this show was because of my feeling that there's a lot of misinformation and lack of information about hearing loss in general. But you and I also talked about the fact that there is still so much misinformation and lack of information about cochlear implants. So I'd like to talk about that a little bit,
sure.
you know, because I've heard things, but you've probably heard a lot more. Everything from, well, I'm just going to go in and have the surgery and poof, I'm going to hear.
Right.
Just like I'm just going to put on a hearing aid and poof, I'm going to hear.
Right.
So I'd really like to dispel those myths and educate our listeners so that they understand that it's a process,
right.
not an event.
Right. You know, the most common thing that I have patients expect is just that they'll hear about cochlear implants, that it's a magical way to hear again, just like they did when they were 20 years old. And that it just requires a couple of hours under surgery, and they'll be back to normal. And it's just a misperception that as a physician, I try to really educate those patients that, in fact, cochlear implants are wonderful. I mean, they have really revolutionized hearing loss, both in infants as well as those who've lost their hearing, whether, you know, age-related hearing loss, toxins, trauma. But that in either case, it is a process. And certainly the surgery, in reality, is a very minor part of that process. The surgery itself is rather straightforward and typically doesn't take very long, but the process of using to use your implant takes months and sometimes years.
But, you know, I remember, and I'm dating myself, 30 years ago, implant surgery was not done on an outpatient basis, and the surgery itself has become mm-hmm. so much more
right.
refined.
Yes.
Do you do it on an outpatient
yeah,
basis
it is.
Now? That is just amazing.
It is. It's actually a very cool surgery. There's the techniques and some of the tools that they've developed in the last really about 20 to 30 years have revolutionized the speed, the efficacy, the safety, which we can, you know, do these inner ear surgeries. And it is done on an outpatient basis. In the very young infants, we'll keep them overnight, but that's about it. Everybody else goes home right after surgery.
Could you describe the surgery, the whole
sure.
surgical process, and then we'll go back
sure.
and talk about candidacy
yeah.
and things like that?
You know, it's it starts obviously in the pre-op area, and you meet your patient, and they, you know, talk to them briefly about it. But the surgery itself takes about an hour and a half, anywhere from an hour to 2 hours, depending on the patient. And it just consists of making a small incision behind your ear that nobody sees except for me. And I love those incisions. I think they're beautiful.
If and, you do say so yourself,
right.
yes.
I love them. Any patient who has a post-vacular
incision. That's
good.
Any good surgeon should feel that way.
So, and you, then you really kind of move some of the tissue out of the way till you're looking at the skull behind the ear. And then there's a series of little drills in a microscope that allows you to remove some of the bone from that location as you move toward the inner ear. And there's a couple of important structures that you have to avoid in the process, one being the nerve that controls your face, that it moves. You have a nerve that actually controls some taste that you have to try to avoid. The balance area of the body is in the exact same location, so the balance canals you have to avoid. But by and large, those are avoidable. So you kind of drill through the skull at that point, and you expose the cochlea, which is really where the inner hearing exists. And when that is exposed, you place a very small 1 millimeter hole into the actual cochlea itself. There are these different regions that the cochlea has, and some fluid is released. And then you place a little wire that has little electrodes in the cochlea, and it wraps around it, usually just one turn or one complete wrap around. And then the wire is connected to a it's not an electrode array, but the wire is connected to is something that goes below the skin, and this, the words escape me right now. But anyway, you place it below the skin in a pocket back up under the scalp, and you sew it up, and it's all completely inside. It's a processor, that's right. The electrodes, there's an internal processor the electrode is connected to that is beneath the scalp, just above and behind the ear, and then you close it up. And that is that processor is what allows you to access the inner ear hearing.
So you're actually placing the wires not all the way down into the cochlea, or
goes directly. It encircles the cochlea once,
right?
So it directly into the cochlea
can reach all the regions.
That's exactly
for
right.
All of the tones
for the
that,
entire.
That
that's
we're
exactly
able
right.
To hear.
The idea is to be able to stimulate the entire cochlear nerve as it comes from the brain and into the cochlea. The basal turn of the cochlea is where we want that wire.
Okay. And then that's it.
Yeah, and that's
it. You make
it
sound so simple, but...
Well, it's not quite that simple. It takes a lot of time to do it, you know, but it's a very elegant surgery. And that part of the body is just unique, and it's simple, yet it provides such a complex, complex information that we use on a daily basis to communicate with one another. And so you feel it's very gratifying, actually, to have those patients come back who are committed to using their implants and they can communicate again.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break to hear from some of our sponsors, and then let's
sure.
talk a little bit more about the whole process. Thank you.
It's live and local. Intelligent Talk Radio on the weekend on AM 1030 KVOI. The Voice.
Do you have ringing in your ears? This is Dr. Janice Gash, founding director of Arizona Hearing Specialists. If you have ringing in your ears, you might have tinnitus. Tinnitus is a medical condition characterized by persistent ringing in one or both ears, which can only be heard by the affected individual. It has also been described as whistling, hissing, buzzing, or pulsing in the ear. These sounds may come and go. However, many sufferers experience symptoms 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The effects range from slight annoyance to severe disruption of everyday life. The American Tinnitus Association estimates that over 50 million Americans suffer from tinnitus. Oftentimes, tinnitus is associated with hearing loss, and if you have this condition, we may be able to help. Call Arizona Hearing Specialists for your hearing evaluation at 742-2845. That's 742-2845.
Ma'am, welcome to the Ritz-Carlton. You ordered a deluxe room, but our presidential suite is open, and we'd like to give it to you for the weekend.
Are you serious?
Absolutely. Have a wonderful time.
Well, thank you. Yes.
Have you ever had an experience like that? Getting bumped up to first class on the airline, or someone surprising you with something far better than you expected? That's exactly what you're going to get right now at Sleep America.
It's simple. Buy a king-size mattress, but only pay for the queen-size price. Or if you don't have room for a king, buy a queen size and only pay for the full size price. Sealy, Simmons, Serta, Kingstown.
If you like getting a lot more than you paid for, don't miss our King for a Queen sale going on right now at Sleep America, where mattresses start at just $99 every day.
Sleep America's annual food drive benefiting the Community Food Bank continues. Donate at any Sleep America store now through April 8th. Call 1-888-94-SLEEP for details.
Come enjoy the sequel to a literary bestseller, the 2011 Tucson Festival of Books, March 12th and 13th on the U of A campus. Connect with more than 400 of the world's greatest authors, including Elizabeth Berg and Martin Cruz Smith. Come for panel discussions and workshops. Come for book signings. Come for fun. It's free and for the entire family. Supported by the University of Arizona and Arizona Daily Star and presented by University Medical Center. Go to TucsonFestivalOfBooks.org for more information.
Why are we proud to live in Tucson?
Because our tapestry of heritage and culture attracts interest from around the world.
While our vibrant community of artists lifts our spirits and sparks our imagination.
Because downtown Tucson is coming to life.
Because you can dress down for the rodeo in the morning and dress up for the theater at night.
Because an army of entrepreneurs and small business owners help fuel our economy.
This is my Tucson, and together we thrive.
Get
the answers to your questions about hearing. It's Hearing Matters, only on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Call in now at 790-2040. That's 790-2040.
Welcome back to Hearing Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Janice Gash, and I am talking today with Dr. David Perry, an ENT surgeon with Tucson Ear, Nose, and Throat. And Dr. Perry, we started talking about cochlear implants, and you were actually describing the surgery, which continues to amaze me that it's an outpatient surgery only taking about 1 to 2 hours. Let's go back a step and try and dispel some of those myths about the surgery, the results after the surgery, what it takes to be a candidate for the surgery, because those are the kinds of questions that we as audiologists get in our practice. I guess I would start first with how are patients referred to you? People are not going to just call up and say, hey, I think I need a cochlear implant surgery.
No.
Or maybe they do, but I would doubt that.
No, most commonly they come to the office through their primary care physicians or through their audiology providers. And typically what's happened is the patients most commonly have had hearing aids and they are unsatisfied with what the hearing aids give them. And they've either heard about a cochlear implant or their doctor has known some of their patients with implants, and so they refer them to us for that evaluation.
To see if they are a candidate.
See if they're a candidate, right.
And let's talk about that candidacy evaluation, because it's part what you do and part audiological and
right.
part what their benefits
sure.
are through their hearing aids or not through their hearing
right.
aids. Can you talk to that?
Absolutely. There's really two sides of candidacy. One is an anatomical candidacy, which really is, can I do the surgery on their ear? And that's evaluated through imaging, mm-hmm. Typically a CAT scan. The other part of that, which is kind of the more complex part, is, how severe is their hearing loss and what kind of hearing loss is it? And so part of the workup of that, we recognize that hearing aids, frankly, are fabulous for a lot of hearing loss. And many patients who come in to the office think that they're a candidate for implants because they aren't hearing well with their hearing aids, when in reality what they need is either optimized hearing aids or better hearing aids.
Right, right.
And so there's a couple of tests we do. We do a standard audiologic test, and that kind of tells us information about how well they do with discrimination and how severe their hearing loss is. And then we have a second test, which is called a HINT test, and mm-hmm. that stands for hearing in noise. And that is the key discriminator as to candidacy. And the FDA has told us that the way you do that test is you put somebody in a hearing booth with appropriate hearing aids. In other words, they have to be adequately aided in order to get a good test result. And with their aids in place, they answer a series of questions. And if they, score below 50%, it means that even with adequate hearing aids, they're not a candidate for aiding any longer, and they would be a candidate for cochlear implantation.
Okay. I've had patients talk about other, I guess it would relate back to what their anatomy is.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If people have had middle ear disorders, if people have had a stapedectomy,
are
they a candidate?
Right.
If they've had any kind of ear surgery?
Most of the time, absolutely. The kinds of things that prevent some from candidacy as far as anatomy would go is, frankly, in an adult who has heard normally most of their life, you know that that cochlea is going to be normal. It's not going to be an abnormal cochlea, so that's going to be okay. But sometimes you'll have the facial nerve maybe running in the wrong location. If it runs directly over the top of the cochlea, then that would prevent you from actually implanting on whatever side that is, but maybe the other side would be okay. Stapedectomy patients are definite candidates. That doesn't compromise your cochlea at all. Certain types of middle ear problems, if you've had some radical ear surgery because of from cholesteatoma or these different ear diseases, it doesn't make you not being a candidate. It just makes the surgery a little more complex.
More difficult.
You have to do a staged surgery in certain situations. But the candidacy anatomically if they've had middle ear infections, that doesn't prevent you from being a candidate. It's just, it's more of whether or not you can place the array, I'm sorry, the electrode in the cochlea. Sometimes people have a cochlea that has bone in it. And so that's a different set of problems you have to deal with.
And how about something like Meniere's?
Good question. Meniere's are candidates, absolutely. So as you or the audience may know, Meniere's disease, you have two components. One is a hearing loss and the other is a dizziness. And usually that over time, the hearing will burn out, we say. And those patients are definitely candidates.
I have a patient who has a pacemaker and is pacemaker dependent. And mm-hmm. unfortunately also has a progressive hearing loss. Mm-hmm. Would
not
the pacemaker prevent this patient from? Mm-hmm.
Good question. And the nice thing is, like we talked about earlier, is just now before we go to the surgery room, the operating room, they put a magnet on the pacemaker. It turns it off. And in the operating room, we can control heart rate. The anesthesiologist really takes care of that. And they're absolute candidates. I've put a number of implants patients with pacemakers.
Okay. Well, good. Well, I hope she's listening. Because what happens is sometimes, unfortunately, and we're at the point where we're going to try something new because our hearing has changed so rapidly.
Right.
I guess comes back to the other question with progressive hearing loss, what's actually causing the progression in the hearing loss? But certainly to try some new amplification first, and
absolutely.
Then if that just doesn't give her the understanding ability that she needs.
Right. And that's the critical thing is, and the goal of the implants, and they're not perfect, but it's communication. And we want to enable everyone to be able to, communicate like they're comfortable with verbally, obviously. And you'll have a patient who has a hearing loss that's severe enough where they feel isolated from their family, from their spouse, certainly from doing community activities, and it's depressing and it's difficult. And the goal of that, whether it's aiding or implanting, is to bring them back into community, basically. And that's the implant does a very good job of that in those individuals who, again, are committed to the postoperative course, which is
Let's talk about that because you and I talked about that previously, and we talk about it with our patients who are hearing aid candidates. And coming back to this, it's not a magic surgery. It's not a miracle surgery, although it certainly is getting more miraculous.
Right.
But you had talked about that your goal, as our goal in audiology, is to help our patients be able to communicate optimally, but that they have to commit to the process of what happens post-surgically, both in terms of audiology, speech pathology, follow-up with you. So let's talk about that so that people understand that it's not, I'm going to wake up in the morning and I'm going to hear and understand.
Right. Well, I think the first thing to know is that you actually do wear an external processor as well. Many patients feel like with a cochlear implant, it's like you make a new ear and they don't have to wear the external hearing aid anymore. And that's not true. There's a magnet on the external processor that attaches to the magnet on the inside that's below the internal processor below your scalp. And that's how you hear sound. Sound goes into the external processor through the magnet and then down into the cochlea. The postoperative, process is long, and I'm honest with patients. If they're committed to it, it'll be great. But it does involve coming back to see me really as a surgeon, since these are so safe. I'm kind of a very minor player in the postoperative process. The audiologist is the primary player, and the speech therapists also.
Right.
It requires what we call mapping, which is basically where you turn the cochlear implant on, and the person begins to hear with an implanted ear, which is different.
But it's also important to know that that's not done the day after surgery.
Correct.
So typically, how long is that? Is that a month, 2 months?
Well, there's a variability. In some centers, they'll do it within a week. We at Two Center Nose and Throat do it within about 3 weeks. Within 3 weeks, and before you actually have the surgery, you know the date you're going to be turned on. And it's, for me as a surgeon, that time period is just to make sure that there are no postoperative complications, that the implant is seated well, that there's no infections, and they'll see me postoperatively, and then I can give the go-ahead, and they'll continue with their first being, quote, turned on.
So that's when they receive their external processor.
And get their first mapping.
Right.
Which in mapping is the word we use to describe the kind of the computer program that kind of programs the implant to be optimized with that person's hearing. And that changes.
Right. So talk about that. Talk a little bit about why that changes. I think, you know, for me, from my audiological standpoint, we always talk to our patients about we're dealing with your ear and your brain and your brain learning what to do with the signals. And
it's exactly right.
It sounds like, you know, the mapping is exactly the same thing.
Right. So the key thing to understand is that your brain is now getting a different signal from the ear than it's used to. And that signal is man-made. You know, we produce that through these electrodes. Mm-hmm. And so initially, you know, individuals were described as a metallic sound, and they hear sound, but they're not initially sure what they're hearing, but they can definitely hear. And then the brain, which is a beautiful thing, just continues to learn. And so over time, you'll revisit, you'll have a certain program for maybe a month, and you'll revisit your audiologist. And in that time period, see the speech therapist and go over specific words or sounds that you try to pick up. And the next visit, they will try a different program to try to maybe fine-tune that a little bit more so that your hearing sounds a little bit better and your brain is learning. And as the brain learns to accept that signal from the implant, your ability to communicate improves, you know, really dramatically. It's nice.
Right. And so what we tell our patients also is you didn't lose your hearing overnight.
Wonderful.
And your brain kind of gets lazy. It didn't hear those sounds, so it'd say, why should I pay attention to it? I'm not going to understand them anyway.
Right.
And then we introduce these sounds, and it is a process, and it can take as long as 6 to 12 months, I would think.
Yeah, I ask patients before I go to the operating room for all of them, they need to give it, and then I say give it a try, I mean be committed to using the implant, even if some people describe it as an irritating noise because they're not used to hearing sounds in that frequency. And I tell them, you've got to be committed to this for 6 months. And I promise you, if you're committed to it for 6 months, from this day, you're going to be come back here and be very, very happy with it. You're not going to hear like you did when you were 3 years old, but you're going to be able to talk and communicate with people, and your life will be enriched once again.
Have you ever had any patients who rejected their implant?
Who are non-users? I have. Yeah, and it's always
so
sad.
So sad.
Yeah, the way to avoid that, and from my perspective, is to try to give them good pre-operative counseling. And some, you know, patients at that stage of their lives just aren't interested in the effort. And it is an effort, Janice. I don't minimize that.
Absolutely.
It is an effort. And they, even though I'll tell them all these things, back in the back of their mind, they're thinking, sure it is, doctor. You know, it's going to turn on perfectly and I'm going to be just fine. And so that disappointment, and fortunately, it's very, very few. But I certainly have had patients who are non-users, and, you know, it's always disappointing as a doctor.
Yeah.
Because you want to see all your patients happy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know you only would do one ear at a time. Maybe I don't know that, but it seems in the patients, my patients that you've seen.
That's correct.
You generally will do the surgery in the poor ear ear is the candidate.
Right. That's another good question, Janice. In children, there are certain situations where they call a simultaneous implant, and that's where you'd implant both at the same time. But there's two problems with that. One, it's kind of a unique situation. Two is insurance companies usually don't want to pay for a simultaneous implant.
Oh, how interesting.
But as far as the which ear to implant, what I go by is you implant the worst hearing ear so that the ear that is not implanted can still be aided, which you know also helps in the overall sound environment you receive. And the second thing is that implanted ear should have at least been hearing something or at least aided, had some sort of audiologic or hearing input within the last 10 years. If someone's had a dead ear, we call it, for let's say 30 years and they've never had any signal in that at all, and then the other ear goes south on them, their good ear goes south, there's certainly evidence out there suggests that maybe you should implant the ear that was hearing more recently because the brain's going to be more likely to respond to that.
How interesting. Interesting. Well, let's take this. We could talk about this for about two more hours. So let's just take a break to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll be back talking with Dr. David Perry.
Intelligent Weekend Talk that's live and local, only on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice.
Do you have difficulty hearing and understanding when people talk to you? Have you been fit with hearing aids but don't use them because they don't work? This is Dr. Janice Gash, founding director of Arizona Hearing Specialists. For 30 years, I've been hearing these questions and many more like them. I'd like to invite you to call now with your questions and concerns at 790-2040 or call Arizona Hearing Specialists to schedule your appointment for a hearing evaluation at 742-2845. That's 742-2845.
Okay, you're a business owner. That 1980s or 90s phone system has just about given out. And those phone system salesmen are actually trying to talk you into spending thousands on a new one. Well, stop and listen carefully. Technology has advanced. That means with Simply Bits, you do not need to buy a phone system for your office ever. That's right, no phone system to buy or lease ever. Simply Bits will even replace your old business phones with brand new ones for free, including every feature you've ever heard of. Simply Bits has thousands of large and small business customers in southern Arizona. Simply Bits usually even cuts your monthly phone cost to a fraction of what you're paying now. So, do you want to pay that phone system salesman, still stuck in the last century, thousands of dollars, or keep that money in your pocket? It really is as simple as that, and I'll bet you're curious to know more. Call Simply Bits at 512-5213. That's 512-5213, or simplybits.com.
Everyone's in a hurry today. Why not get your taxes done fast at FastTax? If filing wasn't fun and fast for you last year, come to FastTax, 6477 East 22nd, Tucson, 647-9417. Or go to FastTaxAZ.com. All you need to do today is come into FastTax and we will give you the best legal refund you can get. Fast life, fast tax, fast refund. Come to FastTax today. You deserve your best legal refund. Go to FastTaxAZ.com now.
Saddle up the sedan and round up your pickup for the second annual Old Pueblo Road Rally. The Old Pueblo Road Rally is a scavenger hunt on wheels. Starts on the east side, ends up at the Oro Valley Country Club. Great prizes, food, silent auction, and live music. And the money raised helps folks get low-cost medical and dental care at St. Elizabeth's Health Center. Visit OldPuebloRoadRally.com or call 670-0854 to find out how much fun fundraising can be.
Get the answers to your questions about hearing. It's Hearing Matters, only on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Call in now at 790-2040. That's 790-2040.
Welcome back to Hearing Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Janice Gash, and we are talking today with Dr. David Perry, Tucson Ear, Nose, and Throat physician. And we've been talking about cochlear implants, and Dr. Perry, I think we could talk about that for about another hour or two. But let's kind of change tactics a little bit.
Sure.
Because I know that pediatric otolaryngology is a special love of yours, also. And let's talk about that.
Sure. Well, you know,
and kind of what you
what
said in
me,
the beginning, what brought you to that?
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you spend a lot of time in residency training with some very, very smart people. I think the way that the United States trains its doctors is fabulous. And it's a lot of time. And at the end of your training time, you make decisions on whether you're going to subspecialize. And for me, you know, as you know, Janice, I have a lot of kids. I mean, there's not a lot of...
You love kids.
I can promise, I can safely tell you there's no other otolaryngologist in Tucson or Southern Arizona.
There aren't a lot of people who have as many kids.
Who has six kids, so... And, you know, the thing about children and hearing loss, with regard to even the implant, and I'd seen this in a residency a couple of times, is you take children and take them from... who are born deaf and allow them again to communicate like you and I would. And it was wonderful. And that's just one of the many things that they do, pediatric otolaryngologists did. And so at the end of my training, as I was kind of deciding what to pursue, and I always had an affinity for ears and ear surgery. It's something I just always enjoyed doing. And I, at that time, decided, well, I'll pursue this. And was very fortunate to go back to Boston to spend time with the guys up in the Northeast for a year. So, and then here in town, I have – We have a pediatric cochlear implant group that meets and discusses those children who have hearing loss, and it's over the CCRS clinic, or the Children's Clinic for Rehabilitative Services. And all of children who do have a profound sensory loss are referred to the clinic, where our team evaluates them and sets them up to get an implant, in addition to all the other wonderful things that the CCRS group does with cleft palate, cleft lip, that we take care of, plus all the other problems. So it's just a nice way to affect someone's life from the very, very get-go, and in a really profound, profound way. So
how many kids do you implant over a year versus adults?
You know, that's a great question. I probably place somewhere between 2 and 3 a month. And I probably implant a child maybe one every quarter. Probably about 4 kids a year get implanted, depending on the year. But it's certainly much less than the adult population, because there's many, congenital or being born deaf is much, much less common than losing your hearing as you get older.
And anatomically, do you find that more of the kids have anatomical issues
that
prevents them from being implanted?
It doesn't prevent it, but it makes it certainly a more complex problem, and you're exactly right. Children, the diseases that cause kids to not be able to hear are different than the diseases that cause adults to be able to hear.
Right.
And in kids, those diseases often can be, cochleas that are malformed, or they can have infections which cause that bone to kind of grow into the cochlea. And so it is a little more, and frankly, those cases are more challenging. It's, it's a small enough space as it is, but when you have a little one-year-old skull, it's even tinier.
Yeah. Well, and I think you're aware that I've been involved in the Nogales Children's Clinic at St. Andrews for 30 plus years. And it's interesting, because when I first started going down there, it kind of started as an orthopedic clinic, and then the orthopods brought physical therapy, said these kids aren't talking. They brought speech said, I don't think they're hearing.
Yeah.
And so it's grown to be an amazing, an amazingly multi-specialty clinic, and we see about 200 kids a month. But kind of going back to our original discussion, every month or every other month, there'll be someone who comes in and says, I want is my kid a cochlear implant candidate? Yeah. Because they have that misconception of, let's just send them up for surgery, like taking out their tonsils, and let them hear.
Yeah, that's the other thing about children that's interesting, is that your ability to develop speech, like you and I are speaking together, kind of goes out as you get older. Your communication center in the brain, which is actually centered around the hearing center, starts to link up to the eyes as you get older. And so I've unfortunately had, kids who are 13, 14, 15 years old who are postlingually or prelingually deaf. In other words, they don't speak.
Right.
And parents come in, want an implant, think they'll start talking again. And those kids can get implanted, but they use that implant for environmental sounds, cars, barking dogs, crying, but often and almost never really develop speech and language again, because that speech and language or communication center kind of locks down after about 8 years of age. And the older you get, when you're deafened as a child, the older you get, the less likely you are to communicate orally, depending on when you actually get that hearing input.
Yeah, kind of sad.
Yeah, so we try to get those kids early so that we can
affect
their lives that way.
And unfortunately, we see a lot of processes down there because of just differences in prenatal care.
Exactly.
That prevents
them from being optimized.
And that we thought, we wouldn't see that again. But we're certainly trying to help them with amplification. Let's talk a little bit about some other issues with children.
Uh-huh.
And very timely article in yesterday's paper in the Arizona Daily Star that talked about the incidence of ear infections actually dropping, and the article alluded to, but said that it was inconclusive, that the decrease in parents who smoke may certainly be causing some of that decline.
Sure.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, you bet. We do know that children who have parents who smoke or have a much higher incidence are much more likely to get chronic ear infections and have the troubles that go on with that, both not being able to hear well to speak, as well as the antibiotics again and again. And there's a couple other things that they've looked at. Certainly daycare contributes to that. And lying down and going to sleep with a bottle of milk. Those three things are really key effectors in developing chronic ear infections as a kid. And it doesn't surprise me at all that this article came out showing that as you have a decrease in smoking, you do find less kids having ear infections. I have parents come in who smoke and they say, well, I only smoke outside but never in the house. And you have to educate them, say it's and let them know that it's the same toxins which they're in the smoke and on their clothes, and they'll still get into the really it's the skin inside the nose that, that causes it to swell and leads to the ear infection. So I just encourage them to stop. And so this is a great article.
It was interesting. It was interesting also because coming back to what you were saying about daycare, they talked about the steady rise in dual career families and that because of that, people, families were putting their kids in daycare and then the ear infections were rising because they were just being spread around. And I certainly remember when I worked in one of the school districts here, my incidence of colds rose because I was around, you know, these young kids with colds and infections all the time.
Very, very common. We see it all the time. And you know, I mean, parents, I mean, there's not a really good answer for that because your kids have to be cared for, but it certainly increases the incidence of ear infections.
So what's the difference? We're talking about quite a few years ago, but when I was growing up, you never really heard about ear infections, but you heard about everybody having their tonsils and adenoids out. And, I mean, I remember in a nightmarish kind of way going to the hospital and having the ether mask over my face, and I can remember it. Now we've kind of progressed from TNAs to ear infections and tubes.
Well, they're related. They're related topics. They're especially related as kids get older. As far as tonsils go, in the 70s and 80s, there were a couple of very, very large studies that came out of actually out of Pennsylvania that demonstrated really gave us some really good criteria as to when we should take tonsils out for infectious reasons. And that decreased. I mean, initially, you just took tonsils out because you had them, I think. And now we have pretty good criteria to say, look, you know, if you're only having maybe two infections a year, you don't have to get them out. But if you have seven in a year, maybe that'd be more indicated. And so we have these numbers, and that changed the reason why we do the tonsillectomy side of it. But on the ear infections, I think maybe they've always been there. What has changed is our understanding of how it's related to, you know, tonsils and adenoids as kids get older. And the adenoid actually sits back where the ear should drain, and so that's related to the ear infections themselves. I think that I certainly hear more about ear infections now because I'm an ENT. I didn't have tubes as a kid and
never
knew anybody that had tubes, but I don't know if I just lived in a, you know, an environment where that wasn't there, but I certainly hear about it much, much more because it is still very, very common.
And I think it's important for parents to realize how ear infections can affect their children's hearing. I mean, we certainly know that it affects it on a daily basis with possible conductive hearing loss while they're having the ear infections. But then we often see children that have had multiple ear infections that unfortunately then are left with some permanent sensory neural hearing loss.
Yeah, that is the, you know, sad case that fortunately we don't see a whole lot of. Those individuals who have enough inflammatory infectious stuff in that middle ear space long enough to where it actually gets into the cochlea and can cause hearing loss. Most of the time, the pediatricians here are good about getting kids who've had, you know, either effusions or fluid in the ears for more than 3 or 4 months straight, or have had, you know, like infections every other month for more than 6 months. They get in, and that's certainly well within the range of being able to take care of them before they develop any long-term permanent hearing loss.
A caller had called in wanting to know about Medicare, and we don't have Medicaid here in Arizona. But can you talk a little bit about insurance reimbursement going back to the cochlear implants?
You bet. The insurance does cover implants. I mean, it's a covered benefit for Medicare as well as all the other plans. They do have the strict criteria we talked about. In other words, they have no interest in implanting a non-user. Because of that, exactly. And so that's why the criteria seems strict when patients come in, they're like, I can't hear, but they don't meet criteria. But it is a covered benefit. And so it'd be covered just like any other, surgical procedure you'd have done. The surgery, the implant itself, I think costs anywhere from $30,000 to $40,000. And that's just for the implant. That doesn't include the whole surgery, but it's an expensive surgery. That being said, the government and insurers understand that the difference it makes in individuals' lifetimes is, I mean, you can't measure that.
Yeah.
And it puts people back into work and they can communicate again. And so it is a covered benefit. Medicare does cover it.
Great, great. Let's take a quick break and we'll be back in a few minutes.
It's the weekend, and that means live, local, and expert talk. Only on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice.
Did you know that avoiding loud noises may help prevent premature hearing loss? This is Dr. Janice Gash, founding director of Arizona Hearing Specialists. There are easy ways to identify if a particular sound is potentially harmful. Do you have difficulty talking or hearing others talk over the sound? Does the sound make your ears hurt? Do your ears ring after hearing the sound? Do other sounds seem muffled after exposure? If you answered yes to any of the above questions, the noise may be damaging your hearing. Most people don't realize how loud many everyday sounds are. Call Arizona Hearing Specialists at 742-2845 to see if you have hearing loss associated with loud noise exposure. That's Arizona Hearing Specialists, 742-2845.
I wasn't born to go with the flow. I was born to make a difference, to make waves. I want my sweat and hard work to mean something. I was born to serve in the United States Coast Guard. If you were born ready to lead, to protect, to uphold the law, then visit GoCoastGuard.com. The United States Coast Guard. Born ready.
Sponsored by the United States Coast Guard, in cooperation with the Arizona Broadcasters Association.
And masonry is the building material of choice for contractors and home builders. Central Arizona Block is the only locally owned and operated masonry manufacturer in southern Arizona. Cabco has a unique selection of paver products, as well as retaining wall products and commercial building units like split face, burnished face, and shot blast. Cabco knows masonry with a production staff with over 35 years experience. Call Central Arizona Block at 514-1177 or online at cabcoaz.com.
Within seconds following the tragic shooting on January the 8th, several people in our community used some of the same basic CPR and first aid skills that Red Cross teaches in its classes and helped save lives that day. A medical emergency could threaten the life of someone you love at any moment. Your ability to immediately use Red Cross first aid and CPR could save their life. I'm Red Cross Director Richard White, urging you and your family to sign up today for our new one-hour class called CPR Made Simple. In just 1 hour, Red Cross will train you and your family to perform CPR, rescue someone from choking, and to use an AED. Please make sure your family is safe and knows what to do in an emergency. For information about CPR Made Simple and other Red Cross life-saving trainings, please go online to redcrossarizona.org or call 318-6872 and sign up today. Thank you.
Get the answers to your questions about hearing. It's Hearing Matters, only on AM 1030, KVOI, The Voice. Call in now at 790-2040. That's 790-2040.
Welcome back to Hearing Matters. I'm your host, Dr. Janice Gash, and we're talking today with Dr. David Perry, an ENT surgeon who works with Tucson Ear, Nose, and Throat. And we've been talking about cochlear implants and ear infections in children. And let me ask you, David, if people wanted to get in contact with you, they should call Tucson Ear, Nose, and Throat.
Right. Yeah. I don't know if you need the number.
But. And certainly, or speak to their primary care physician or their audiologist. I know that you've seen several of our patients who are just delighted with their cochlear implants. Before we finish today, I did just want to tell our viewers that we at Arizona Hearing Specialists are going to be providing educational seminars at the end of this month, March 22nd, 23rd, 24th. And you can call our office in Tucson at 742-2845 or in Green Valley at 648-3277 to sign up for those educational seminars. Dr. Perry, we've had a couple of people come into our office. I know there's a couple of other surgical procedures that are being done or being talked about. And one of them is the Esteem hearing implant. Uh-huh. I know that your group doesn't do that, and I think you just mentioned that you didn't think there was anybody in Tucson doing that. But can you talk about it a little bit? Because people are asking.
Sure.
And let's dispel those myths.
Right. The Esteem is a implantable hearing aid, basically. It's for hearing loss that isn't severe enough to necessarily need an implant. It is I don't know if my friends in Phoenix are doing them either. It hasn't quite reached a level of acceptance in the community that it's actually better than a hearing aid to warrant, you know, widespread usage or even recommendation of the procedure. It's still in its very early phases in it. And since it's doing kind of what a hearing aid does, it's hasn't really been shown to be any better than a really good hearing aid. And yet you do have, you know, you operate on somebody and the implantable hearing aid has a battery just like an external hearing does, and it does need to be changed at times. That is a second surgery that they would need at some future point. In the process of that surgery, you actually do disrupt the little ear bones that connect to each other. Uh-huh. And so in that situation, if the aid isn't working, you have an instant we call a conductive loss because your ear bones aren't communicating like they were previously.
Because you actually, my understanding is you actually go in and destroy one of those
ossicles.
Yeah,
you actually, exactly.
When put the implant
that's exactly
in the
right.
place.
Yeah, you cut what's called the incus. You cut the incus and then you connect this little implantable hearing aid from the stapes to the remaining portion of the incus. And the idea is a great idea. It uses your own vibrations of the eardrum to augment that sound, but it hasn't been shown to do it a lot more efficiently than a really good hearing aid. And so, and incidentally, it's like a $30,000 procedure that is not covered by insurance companies.
Very interesting. So for all of those of you out there that think that, again, here's another new surgery that is going to magically help you hear better, basically it looks like the goal is to amplify sound, but amplify it internally. And maybe it's something that will be developed in the future, and we'll see. We actually have a caller. Teresa, you're on the line. Do you have a question?
Yeah, I wanted to ask. I'm in my late 50s now, but when I was growing up, my brother was a year and a half younger than me, and my question was, he was always getting ear infections. He was getting all kinds of infections. I almost never got sick to this day. Almost never get sick. He ended up having his tonsils out, his appendix out. I got none of that. Are some people just more susceptible from childhood on to ear infections or other infections?
Well, I mean, certainly everybody's immune system is different, and so that kind of determines what you're going to be able to be susceptible and not. And certainly the anatomy of your ear and eustachian tube are different, just like the anatomy of your nose and your eyes and your face. And so certainly different individuals are going to be more susceptible than others, depending on.
We were in the same environment, went to the same school, and I never got sick, and he was always getting sick.
Right, and that is not uncommon. In same families, one kids will have it, and it has to do with both the anatomy of the eustachian tube back in the back of the ear, and what contributes to a lot of the middle ear disease, as well as your different immune systems.
So it's the individual anatomy that contributes to it. I didn't know that.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? So you were the lucky one.
I was the lucky one. To this day, I'm 57 years old. I almost never get sick.
Good.
He still gets flu and stuff all the time. Anyway, thank you.
Well, thanks,
you
Teresa.
Bet. Thanks for the call.
Thanks for calling in. So we've talked a lot today. I hope that that the listeners out there came away with a little better understanding of what cochlear implants can do, what they can't do, that they are a fabulous surgical way to help the correct candidates hear better, but that it is not a surgery kind of one and done. It's a process, just like wearing any amplification is a process, because we're working with our ears and our brains and pulling that all together. We talked about ear infections. So for those of you out there that are smokers, stop smoking around your babies and be careful about them being in childcare, and don't give them bottles when they go to sleep. And perfect. Dr. David Perry, I'm just so thrilled to have had you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful.
Join us again next Sunday at 2 p.m. on AM 1030 KVOI The Voice. And to make an appointment at Arizona Hearing Specialist, call 742-2845. Hearing Matters, helping you hear your best.